In this episode, we will be talking about eating disorders, in particular anorexia. This is a sensitive topic, so we just want to make our listeners aware. Welcome to Tea with the Changemakers. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Zoe Burnett, a children and young persons specialist support worker who has first-hand lived experience of conquering eating disorders, anxiety and depression. She's a suicide survivor and believes that life is more than self-hatred and celery sticks. And she's going to talk to us today about atypical anorexia in particular, something that she has battled with and is now helping other people to recover from. In addition to working full-time as a support worker, Zoe spends many hours outside of her day-to-day job educating people on anorexia. She's been recently filming with Channel 4 for a documentary, and she's created recovery cards, which are 50 unique cards featuring techniques, activities, distractions and skills to help people in the recovery process. She's also an accomplished speaker, has done a TEDx talk on this topic. So, Zoe, welcome to Tea with the Changemakers. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on the show today and to talk about absolutely all these amazing things that have happened since you've done a TED talk on a very, very important topic. So just for our listeners, I wanted to share, Zoe specialises in sharing her lived experience of atypical anorexia and offers tailor-made workshops and talks on the subject and other factors associated with the condition. You're unafraid, as I've read here, to share your experience on mental health, sexual orientation, pregnancy, and your journey towards body positivity. But before we get started, there's a term there that I think maybe if you're listening, you may think, oh, that's interesting. You might have heard of the word anorexia, but you might not have heard of the term atypical anorexia. And there are many different forms. I wondered if we could start off before we talk about yourself and everything you're doing, just to kind of really explain to our listeners, what does that mean?
Yeah, of course. Atypical anorexia, in a nutshell, is anorexia, but for those in a normal sized body. Mm-hmm. It is still as deadly as anorexia. You still have all the same mental elements that some of anorexia would have as well. The physical aspects can be exactly the same, but because you haven't got that underweight tick box, if you like, it's not taken as seriously. Mm-hmm. And in my honest opinion, atypical anorexia should not exist. It should just be called anorexia. Call it what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're a strong advocate of this set point theory, which inspires people to rebel against social norms, ditch the diet and embrace the notion of body acceptance. That's what you're championing, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Set point theory, I could sit and talk about all day. But it's basically the science behind why 95 to 98% of diets fail. Basically, set point theory, it works similar to your body's temperature. If you get too hot, your body will do things to cool yourself back down naturally. Exactly the same with our weight. So if you imagine your set weight, if you overeat, your body will do things like speed up your metabolism, slow down your hunger signals to bring your weight back down to where it needs to be at. I always use Christmas as an example because I turn into a giant block of cheese come January because I just live on red wine and cheese. But come January, I don't engage in any fad diets. I naturally crave different foods. I don't want to see another slice of cheese, to be honest. And naturally, that weight kind of comes back down to my predetermined genetic weight, to where my body needs to be at to function properly. However, the opposite happens if you eat less than what your body likes. So your hunger signals will speed up and your metabolism slow right down. And what happens is when your metabolism slows down, you'll feel colder. You won't be able to concentrate as well because your body's desperately trying to preserve energy to bring you back up to where your weight needs to be at. But more interestingly is the hunger signals increase. You might not feel hungry, but you become mentally hungry. I don't know about you guys, but if I've happened to not eat enough one day, I will be walking into the kitchen and not really knowing why I'm in there, but it's my brain trying to get me to go get food. I will open up the cupboards and be like, why am I in this cupboard? It's because, again, my brain's trying to get me to get food because it's hungry. Now, what a lot of people get stuck in is they'll stand on the scales, ugh, hate them, and they'll be like, oh, I don't like my weight. So they'll go on a diet, they'll try and lose weight, go below the set point, but then the second they start eating normally, they'll put the weight back on, straight back up to where they was, because that's where their body needs to be at. Mm-hmm. And again, we get shamed as a society for not fitting into ideals, whatever, so we feel guilty. So again, we'll go on a diet, we're trying to lose weight, but because of set point theory, metabolism slows down, hunger signals speed up, we put the weight back on, and we just spend our whole lives, if we're not careful, going round and round and round on this diet circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to ask, when will it stop?
And you, on a day-to-day basis, actually, in your job, you work with children and young people as a specialist support worker in eating disorders. And so you're helping to educate people on this topic, aren't you?
Absolutely, yes. So I do work for a charity called First Steps Eating Disorder Service. We are based in Derby, but we cover like Derbyshire, Leicestershire, Hertfordshire. Soon, Lincoln, you watch your space.
You're moving into different territories.
We are trying our hard because it's needed.
Yes.
But as well as supporting children and young people one-to-one, I'm also in charge of the school workshops, which is really cool because it means I get to go into school and I get to teach children about set point. I get to teach them about dieting and what it actually does to our metabolism. And I get to teach them nutrition properly. I swear, if one more PE teacher comes up to me and starts banging on about good or bad food and that you need to do this amount of jumping jacks to burn off a cake, I will lose my mind.
Are you so telling them that you're in there
pretty much?
Yeah.
So again, you know, we're able to go in schools and say, actually, all food is needed for your body to function properly. We actually need some fats in our diet to absorb all the other good stuff, you know, giving them that basic nutrition knowledge that gets lost amongst diet culture and take the pressure off them and remind them that actually we are genetically designed to be different. We have genetics, we have DNA going back to set point. We're not all going to be the same shape and size because we haven't all got the same DNA. And actually, isn't that amazing? How boring would it be if we did all look the same?
Oh, I always say that. That's one of my big things. Why do we all want to look like each other? I think difference is something that should definitely be celebrated. We need all sorts of people from all different walks of life, fully diverse. And that comes down to the size of our bodies. And yeah, you know, absolutely. I'm 100% behind you on that. So you're on the front line. You are working with young people a lot. Can you tell me, you know, We see lots of statistics and data all the time. Is this problem getting worse? Is it the same? Is it always, you know, is it getting better? Like, what's the current situation with eating disorders? And obviously, in your area of working with young people, worse or better?
Heartbreakingly, horrifically worse. I come across a statistic not long ago which stopped me in my tracks, to be honest, and nearly broke me. And that was that 80% of 10-year-olds are now scared of being fat and worried about their body. 10-year, I'm not being funny, but I'm pretty sure when I was 10, I was too busy deciding which tree to climb next or where am I going to build my next den. But yet 80% of 10-year-olds are now worried about their body. Also, 90% of teenage girls have avoided an activity due to the way they look, and 87% of teenage boys.
Yeah,
the statistics are there.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking.
So, you know, it's a problem that seems to be getting worse. Do we know why it's getting worse? You see lots of headlines, lots of things in the newspapers that talk about the impact of, you know, Instagram on young women, particularly around, you know, body and body positivity, or in many cases people talk about body negativity. You know, is that really a thing from your perspective?
Social media does have a lot to answer for, I'm afraid. It's not the main cause, of course, but I truly believe it has contributed. I scroll through Instagram myself and very rarely do I see a normal looking photo.
Yeah,
they are all filtered or have this effect on them, or someone's made the lips really, really big in this effect. And I'm just like, where's all the normal looking pictures? And we forget that people kind of compare themselves to these pictures, that even the people themselves don't look like that because it's been filtered to high heaven. So we're comparing ourselves to a computer's image. If I had it my way, filters just wouldn't exist. I'm sorry.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it must be having some kind of impact from simply what I scroll through on a day-to-day basis, and then having young teenagers in my life as well, and how they compare and contrast. And, you know, as parents, as adults, we need to help them to understand that that's not the real world, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just having those honest conversations and, you know, talking about these filters, just not avoiding them, but just going, I can't help but notice that you can't seem to take just a normal photo of yourself. What are you trying to achieve with these filters, I wonder?
And everyone's experience is obviously personal and very different. And coming back to your own lived experience, do you recall a sort of age of where, you know, it started for you, and any reasons, any triggers as to what? Yeah, just talk us through your lived experience.
Okay, so my eating disorder started really when I was about 14. I was a young carer for my mum. I didn't exactly have a normal childhood, you know. I was caring or doing bits and bobs, you know. It was very different. I was bullied horrifically in school. To be fair, looking back, I was extremely spotty, thanks hormones. I played the flute, I wore glasses, I was a little bit of a chubbier kid, I was an emo just to top it off. What chance did I stand, really? But yeah, so I was horrifically bullied at school, constantly called worthless, not good enough, fat, ugly, piece of crap. But then I met someone and I fell in love, I guess, apart from because I was so used to believing that I was worthless, I didn't see the danger that I was in. Mm. Unfortunately, this relationship was extremely abusive, physically, emotionally, and sexually abusive. And I felt like it was my fault. Or my body's fault. Because maybe if I looked different, maybe if I'd been the person that he wanted me to be, maybe, just maybe, these things wouldn't have happened. I somehow managed to get out of that relationship. One day after, I remembered I was completely covered in blood, I just ran, and I just kept running and running and running away from everything. And then I took it out of my body. And from that day onwards, I constantly, every time anything went wrong in my life, I played my body. And I'd take it out on my body when actually it was never my body's fault. Of course it wasn't, but I couldn't see that then. So from a very young age, I just got stuck in this yo-yo trying to change my set point and being unhappy with who I was. Mm. And also it numbs the emotions. Mm. Now, when you're not fueling your brain properly, it gives you something else to focus on. So I didn't have to think about what had happened. Mm. So I'm blocking everything out, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And this real cycle that you found yourself in, and you know, that went on for some time, but you did move towards recovery. And I mean, that's why we're talking to you today, because you did an absolutely fantastic TED talk that has been viewed, you know, thousands and thousands of times, sharing the experience that you've just been talking about there. Talk to us about that road to recovery then for you.
It was extremely difficult to accept that I had an eating disorder, because my body was wrong in society's eyes. You know, I was in a larger body. So how on earth could I have an eating disorder when I was fat? Mm. According to that BMI chart, I was actually overweight, nearly obese.
Did you think people weren't taking you seriously then, or you couldn't get a diagnosis in the way that you were looking for to explain how you felt?
I got laughed at, to be honest, by healthcare professionals when I said, look, I am losing, because I was losing a ridiculous amount of weight in a short amount of time. Of course I was. And when I was trying to explain, look, I'm really conscious about the way I look. I can't, it's not that I didn't want to eat. I couldn't physically eat. I was so terrified of eating at this point. And it's just like, oh, well done. Oh, you're doing a really good job. Keep it up. So that just reinforced the idea that actually my body's so wrong that I need to keep going, because this is the only way I'm going to be. I got given praise that I'd never known. Mm. So I was lapping it up.
Yeah, that is so interesting, isn't it? Because as a society, you know, you anorexia, there is a image that comes to your mind. Yeah. And, you know, what is on the scales will tell you that, as well as what you might see with your eyes. And that is the image that we have as a society. But what you're saying is that, you know, with atypical anorexia, that's not the case. You can look very different and the scales can say something different, but you could still have anorexia.
Like I said, I was a normalish weight, I guess, but we forget that eating disorders are a mental illness. The torture that was going on in my brain day in, day out, every second that I was awake was torture. All I could think about was food, weight and shape. That was all I cared about. I had no social life because I didn't dare go out with my friends and, you know, go for a coffee, because coffee, oh my goodness, how many calories, can't control it. Ooh, scary. But again, even though I was a healthy weight, my physical health was shocking as well. I was extremely malnourished. And again, we don't think about it because, again, normal weight, how can you? But it got to the point that in September 2018, I was told I wouldn't live to see Christmas because of the damage that it had done to my heart.
And who told you that?
That was an A&E doctor. When I, because I'd just got diagnosed, finally managed to get a diagnosis, but I collapsed like a few days later because recovery is new, you know, it's not going to change overnight. But I collapsed again and, yeah.
So it came to, it came too late. It came too late and it came in a crisis situation in A&E, did it? Wow. And this is what you're doing, is trying to raise awareness and trying to educate people on this condition.
Absolutely. Another statistic that I come across, well, quite a long time ago, actually, but it's my favourite and I use it all the time. And that is only 7% of people with an eating disorder are underweight.
Wow, that's yeah, that's quite shocking.
So if you assume, you know, if someone is presenting with, you're basically missing 94% of sufferers. Because you're just focused on that this stereotypical underweight teenage girl that we're so used to seeing. When actually the service users that I see are half and half, male and female.
Is it your experience as well, obviously talking to young people in your own experience, that it's hidden because perhaps people are keeping it hidden and because you don't see it in the same way as I just described, you know, you're not of the typical image society expects. Is it hidden? Or are people literally saying, I have an issue, please help me, but because what they see is not the typical perception they have in their mind, they're not getting it and it's leading to those crisis situations. What's your take on that?
It's hard because the NHS have recently said that they'll remove the BMI criteria, because before you had to be like a low weight before you could be accepted for treatment for an eating disorder, which is just ridiculous. As I've just explained, only 6% of people would actually maybe get support. So the amount of people I've come across, it's like, yeah, but no one's taking me seriously because I don't look like I've got an eating disorder. And as much as advocates like myself, there's loads of us out there that are banging this drum, banging on about that 6-7%. And things are changing, but it's too slow. Lives are being lost.
I'd say too slow and possibly too late for some people, which is just completely unacceptable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is heartbreaking. Again, it's not necessarily malnutrition that kills people with eating disorders. It tends to be suicide. When you are starving your brain, you cannot regulate those emotions. You cannot think. You're so consumed with self-hatred and low self-esteem because they're elements of the eating disorder. It's that drives those suicidal thoughts.
Oh, goodness me. Wow. And actually, you have talked about this and in a book that you've written. It's called Inside My Ed, which I absolutely love that title. And that was published in July last year. And in the book, you talk about how to recognise an eating disorder when your BMI says you're healthy, as we've talked about. And you do talk about your true story and your lived experience and your battle to get treatment and recognition for atypical anorexia. It is quite a harrowing story, but it's a truthful, honest, authentic account, and it actually landed you at number 4 on Amazon's bestsellers in the eating disorder biography section, didn't it? And you did climb to number 1 with it. So it is a book that I think is you know, I know you're feeling embarrassed about that, but that's something you should be in, you know, really, really proud of. It's had real continuous praise and real positive feedback. And you have had loads of wonderful messages about it as well. So you are helping with this area.
When I was approached by an independent publisher and she said, you should write a book, and I was drinking gin at the time, and I literally laughed in her face because I was like, mate, I'm dyslexic, I have ADHD, I've got the attention span of a gnat, and you want me to write a book? It ain't gonna happen. I'm not smart enough, I'm not clever enough. And she just kind of gave me a business card and was like, I'll be in touch. And I was like, whatever, shoved it in my bag, kind of ignored it. And I got this phone call going, just meet me for a coffee. And I was like, if you're buying, because I did know her quite well. So I ended up going for coffee and leaving with this publishing contract and was like, oh, is this happening? What do I do? Yeah, so it's a bit of an accident, to be honest, because she happened to be at the TEDx event. She spoke herself the same year as what I did. So we did, become quite good friends. And
it led to this great book that's now out there, which is a great resource. And I love this this line that I've got here, is that Zoe believes life is more than self-hatred and celery sticks. It absolutely is, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. If I could print that on a magnet, I'll give it to every person that I knew.
I love it. We might be able to help you with that one. I'm in awe of all the things you've done, because, there's a lot of people who have gone through this lived experience. And for some people, they can't talk about their story and they can't share that. But by doing so, you are helping other people. They are coming forward. They're recognising that in themselves by sharing that experience. But beyond that, you're also, thinking about what resources can I design? Like, how can I do more? And I absolutely love that. You've got some recovery cards that you're hoping to start a crowdfunding campaign, which is, 50 unique cards that are featuring techniques, activities and distractions and skills to help anyone in the recovery process. I noticed that you're filming with Channel 4 for a documentary.
Yeah.
And just before we get onto that, you're one of 30 under 30 in our local area. So that, this is an award scheme where they recognise, 30 people under the age of 30 who are making a massive notable difference in our local area to all sorts of things. And you're one of them. So yeah, talk. I'm really excited to hear about the Channel 4 documentary. Tell me what you're doing.
I always say I recovered loudly so others don't struggle in silence. Every time I do any sort of TV, any sort of radio, yes, I would get trolled to high heaven because it's just
really
people. Yeah. So frustrating. Mm. But there will always be one or two people in my inbox that reach out for support and that need signposting, and that's who I do it for.
Mm.
So that's why I do put myself out there, even though it does cause backlash, even though I do get quite a lot of online abuse. I don't care if it's for one or two of those lost souls out there that actually listen and need a support.
Wow, that's commendable, because no one should have to deal with online abuse, no one whatsoever, and that can be enough to put people off from putting themselves out there, as you describe. So how do you deal with those sort of online trolls and bullies, because it affects your mental health?
Yeah, at first it really got to me. Mm. And it was like, oh my gosh, but I'm just trying, because I did get a lot of abuse, like, but you're too fat to have an eating. So what on earth are you on about? Oh, go on a diet, you just eat more. No, eat less and move more. That's all you have to do. It's so misinformed. And just so at first it did really affect me, but then it just motivated me more. And I was like, oh my gosh, how misinformed. Like, clearly I need to be doing this because it's causing conversations. It's fine. If people get too much, then there's a wonderful blog called Block and Delete and Ignore and just focus on those one or two souls in the inbox that need a support and just block and sod everyone else.
Yeah, well, commendable again, and actually I love that attitude, just keep pushing on and pushing through and, ignoring the bullies and the trolls, because, as I've said already throughout this podcast, I think, you're not helping just one or two people. There's lots of people out there who are going to be helped by your books, your recovery cards, and even just in your day-to-day job that you do as a support worker is obviously helping lots of people across our region as well. So, Zoe, thank you so much for joining us on Tea with the Changemakers. You're an absolute inspiration. And I look forward to seeing what you do next. Have you got plans for the future, other than a TV documentary, what else is there? Are we going to see you on Netflix and, you know, on a film?
I highly doubt that. But one of the things, I'm not necessarily taking a back seat from that sort of thing, but I am training to be a counsellor now. So obviously I'm a support worker at the minute. I just want to go that one step further and become a counsellor so I can support those that are affected by not just a person suffering but their whole families. You know, get support out there for parents and carers, get support out there for siblings. My husband was so lost when I was struggling. Where's the support for them? Let's provide some sort of system. I don't know what it's going to be or look like yet, but let's provide some sort of wraparound care for all of those lives that are affected by an eating disorder.
Well, if you're involved in helping to lead that, I'm sure it'll be a wonderful resource or service that will become as a result of that. So yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Zoe, and you take care.
You too, my lovely.
Thanks for listening to Tea with the Changemakers. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then remember to subscribe to us wherever you're listening. And if you're interested in hearing from other changemakers that we've spoken to so far on the podcast, there's over 20 now in our library, then head over to our website, social-change.co.uk, open up the menu and click on podcast.